Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days, a 101-night sleep trial, and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices, up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. Ghostbed, the coolest beds in the world.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 16, Episode 18. This week, we dove back into the Delphi case, and we heard Bob break down and analyze Richard Allen's first police interview. For anyone interested in Delphi, this was a fascinating episode that drummed up a lot of listener questions and theories. And today, we have a special guest joining us, the one and only Dr. Scott from the LA Not So Confidential podcast. But before we jump into that, do we have any housekeeping?
Just a little bit. I just want to mention to you guys for, I know a lot of you guys are listening to the kids podcast from my school, the Underestimated podcast. They have all the different groups have all of their first three episodes done. And they asked me today if we can speed this process along so their episodes aren't airing in November. So starting this week, we're going to start airing 2 episodes a week. So if you're watching this live tomorrow, Wednesday, if you're hearing on Friday, a couple days ago, Wednesday, the third episode in the series on the Jeanette Robertson case is airing. And then on Friday, same day this is dropping, the next group, who they're calling their series Voiceless, they're covering a series of missing persons cases all out of the East Lansing, Michigan area. Their first episode is dropping on Friday. And then we're going to continue that, at least for the near term. We're going to, there'll be an episode Wednesday, then another episode on Friday as we move along here with the podcast, because they're wanting their episodes, at least their first three, to get out before they graduate. So we're getting that process started. I mentioned last week that I might reach out to Dr. Shiloh, and instead I thought, you know who's better than Dr. Shiloh? He's rolling his eyes. Just kidding. Shiloh was busy, so I reached out to Dr. Scott. Not that we were my second choice at all, Dr. Scott. They both host the LA Not So Confidential podcast. They're both forensic psychologists. So Scott is joining us today, as Zach mentioned, on the follow-up. And what I asked Scott to do leading up to this is to kind of give his own kind of analysis, you know, watch the video and give his own analysis of it, or form his own analysis of it, and then to listen to mine so that he can be here to help answer any questions and then give any feedback to me and you guys about how that analysis went. Before, I guess we'll go into, because we have a bunch of questions. We have Scott here, so I'm going to try to knock a bunch of them out real fast, real quick. Bye.
Oh, wow.
Jan looks right. Okay. The one thing I want to address is that we got a few questions about the use and comments about the use of AI that I did at the end of the episode. So, Jay, if you have one of those loaded up, I guess I know you had one that was kind of pretty concise. We got a few emails, but if you want to read that, and then I'll kind of explain some things about that.
Sure. So we got an email from Tori. We got a post from Nancy. I'm going to just read a little bit of Nancy's post. I want to gently push back on the idea that AI would be unbiased. All computer programs work with the data they have been given. In the case of AI, it's data that has been pulled from all over the web, often without the context of what it's actually looking at, which means it isn't actually a reliable source of information for much of anything, in part because if it doesn't have an answer, it will just make stuff up instead of returning no results. Note that the response you got didn't really tell you anything you hadn't already come up with. It also may well have a lot of information about the case, including anything that was posted on Reddit, which has been scraped for AI. And so this idea of, and then Tori's email was like, it's not really synthesizing information or giving an opinion. It's just sort of regurgitating. And we had questions about not necessarily debunking that, but just asking you for more information about what your process was. So, yeah, how do you want to address all that?
Yeah, so I'll kind of we'll hit on all this so that we can dig into the actual interview with Dr. Scott Weiss here, too. First of all, the process I went through. So my process was the same thing I'm going through with the second episode or the second interview right now. This one I'm not going to run through AI because I've got a pretty clear read, at least I think, on the second police interrogation. But I watched it twice. First time, just watched it. Second time, I watched it taking notes. Third time, I went through and started like doing a real-time analysis of it as I was going through it. And I kind of came up with my thoughts on it. And that's when I thought about reaching out to Dr. Scott or Jim Clementi or Dr. Shiloh to see, you know, if we can get another opinion on it. And then I thought, as I said in the episode, like, it'd be interesting to see if we had something completely unbiased, just to hear, like, just because everybody's wanting to, and you can see from the comments, like, people's biases already, they leak out pretty, whether it's a bias that Richard Allen's guilty, or a bias that Richard Allen is innocent, or a bias about AI in general, or a bias that thinks AI is amazing. All these things kind of leak out. And so I thought, well, let me look at just something that's just going to analyze the data in this. And so that's when I got the idea of using ChatGPT to do it. So then what I did is I had to first rip the audio off the YouTube video. And then I use some software we use to do our transcripts where we generate transcripts from our episodes for our transcription team to use. I put the audio into that to generate a transcript. Then I uploaded the audio and the transcript into ChatGPT. It compared them and then cleaned up the transcript a bit, you know, where it thought that things needed to be cleaned up. And then I just asked it to analyze the interview using, you know, word choices and speech patterns, and give me an analysis of the behaviors exhibited in just the audio, by the way, not the video, just the audio. And I wanted to see, like, what would, you know, how would this compare to what I have? I thought it'd be interesting for people to share it. So then it took several hours. Like, I left and it was like, I'll get back to you in a little bit with this. I asked it, how long are you thinking? It was, it's going to take like 8 hours. So I left it overnight, came back and then downloaded it, and then had like conversations with the artificial intelligence about, you know, how it came to its information and so on and so forth. What you guys got was just like the summary. I asked to give me just a summary that I can read on the show for what you came up with. So that was the process. To answer the questions about biases of the AI or its use as a tool, the first thing to point out, and Dr. Scott and I were just talking about this when we were in the pregame for the patrons, is that if it's going to be used, it can only be used as a tool, which is what I was using it for. Meaning, I would never take, for example, this interview, throw it into AI and say, give me a script about what you think, and then just read that as my own work. And I think that is, and Zach and I was just talking about this too, as an artist.
Yeah.
That is, in my opinion, a misuse of the tool, right? Now I'm trying to get it to generate something that I can present as my own work. What I was doing is trying to use it as kind of a check and balance and to use it as a tool just to give more information out there. And I think that is an effective use. And keep in mind, I'm a high school teacher. So, you know, I deal with like students using AI and stuff all the time. And that's something that I've worked through the last year of like, how do you balance that? Like, where is it a tool that's being used in industry that I want the kids to know how to work? And where does it cross the line into they're not doing work anymore. They're not learning anything. So there's always that balance there. And as far as the comments I got were, the negative ones were where they said, you know, if it doesn't know the answer, it'll just fill something in. There was that it could be biased because it's got, you know, it's crawling Reddit and everywhere else and getting opinions about things like that. That from my research into it, that is not accurate. So the way ChatGPT works, and I think the other large language models as well, they don't, like, every session is new. When you log in, it's a new session, it's a clean slate, and it starts looking for what you tell it to look for. So your ChatGPT, it's just not possible. There's not enough computing power in the world for it to just have stored in its air quotes brain every Reddit post and everything that's happened. That's not how it works. It all depends on your prompts and what you're asking it for. So in my case, what I asked it to do was just take this interview, analyze the speech patterns and behaviors that it hears, and give me an analysis of that. And I actually asked the AI how it did that. And it said the way it does it is what it was able to crawl through and do that a human can't do in that limited amount of time is crawl through, it said, tens of thousands of human recorded police interviews and the analysis of those interviews and reports and papers and things that have been published online about what certain choices, word choices mean, about what different pauses and things, all the different behaviors that come out in audio that people that do statement analysis use. It tapped into those resources and then applied those tools to this audio. So as far as the bias angle that like, because I had a few people that were like, it knows from Reddit what people are saying about Richard Allen being guilty or about him being innocent. That's not accurate. That's not true. That's not what the AI is doing. It is the prompts that I gave it were to analyze these specific things. And so it went online and found any resources, any published books, any published papers, anything about this subject and then applied that information to how it analyzed it. But again, I'll just say that it's not something that should be used to replace work. But I think as a tool, I thought I thought their analysis was good. Somebody said, I think the one you just read, well, it didn't tell you anything you already didn't know. I didn't expect it to. If it had had some kind of crazy, wacky, well, this means this person's guilty, then I would have been like, no, what do you mean? Like, this is, there's a lot of different schools of thoughts about behavioral analysis in general already. But to go to that extreme, I would have been out of line. But for it to say that, based on this and these behaviors, we detected, there was, and it even kind of said that this seemed to indicate, nervousness or deception, but it could also indicate just that they're nervous, that they're uncomfortable about the setting or something like that. And ultimately, what did it land on? You need forensic evidence and all these different things to try to verify where it's at. So I don't think that the takeaway from the episode should be the 2 minutes where we talked about what ChatGPT said about it. Like there, that's just one of the other tools that were used as part of this process. And it was just really just me trying to get something completely as close to unbiased as we could get. So that's all I want to say on the AI topic, unless one of you guys have something you want to add.
Well, I was just going to say, since Dr. Scott is here, I would love to hear your thoughts on that, Dr. Scott. Like, when Bob reached out to you, did you listen to the episode before you watched the video, or what was your process and what are your thoughts about the kind of ChatGPT piece?
That's a great question. So what I did was I didn't. In fact, I was trying to find it and it was, my feed was all screwed up. So I watched the link of the video that Bob sent me and, kind of took down my own impressions. And I think I have an advantage or a disadvantage in being here in that I've followed this, but I have not done any kind of deep dive research except in two areas that really piss me off about this process that we'll talk about. But then I went and listened, earlier, like really early this morning, what the episode was on. And I was really pleased. Like I felt like we were really sort of on the same wavelength about what we were hearing, what we were seeing. And I don't know if he's guilty or innocent. I don't have enough data. But when it comes around to just one final thing on AI for me is that, your listener really had a very good point in that garbage in, garbage out has always been
racism in, racism out. Yeah,
exactly. Like you have to look at that in any equation. So on top of that, psychology and forensic psychology and behavioral sciences are all about human behavior, which is not completely quantifiable. It's not an equation where we can say A plus B equals C, because humans don't work that way. We're squishy, right?
Right.
And we have a lot of data in psychology, but it's not always an indicator. Of course, my ADHD monkey brain was going all over the place with some of Alan's answers and his evasiveness. And it wasn't typical of what we're used to seeing. It was indicative, but it wasn't typical. And we can get into that, you know, mm-hmm. in the particulars. But yeah, I mean, I everybody has a point here. But again, as we were talking in the pregame, this is a tool. It's not going away. It's just not. AI is here to stay unless we have, you know, the Dune, our version of the Dune Butlerian jihad to wipe out AI or thinking machines, right?
Yeah.
No, clearly, hopefully there are some geeks in the audience that get that. But yeah, it's not going away. So we're going to have to find a way to use it ethically and morally and correctly.
Yeah. Great answer.
Yeah. Before we get in, because I don't want Zach and Janet to get lost. Did I say it right? I just say Jack and Zanet.
Jack and Zanet.
To get lost. Right. I want to real quick ask Zach, what did you think about the episode before we really start to dig in?
I really appreciated the way you broke it down. I also realized that it was just way more confusing to me to actually listen to the interview because of what's happening. Like, there's so many aspects that you feel like, I don't know what's happening in this part. And they're like, oh, I feel like he's being very truthful here. And then you're like, well, he's obviously feels like he's hiding something here, but what does it mean?
Right.
And that was a hard part. And then there was like a few little minor things that I picked up on that I don't, you know, there was the part where he talks about we go to the trails. We mm-hmm. go to the trails.
That's my number one. Honestly, for some reason, that's my number one. Like, I can't, I'm really so confused by it.
I'm not.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll tell you.
I'd love to hear. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me, because I think that's a great point. Look, because I was on the lookout for it. After I had heard Bob, and I was like, okay, well, let me go back and listen for that. And then I go back to when Bob Mata was on your show back in December, and he was talking mm-hmm. about the really enmeshed relationship that Alan has with his wife. Mm-hmm. So he really thinks of them as a we. So I immediately said, when he said we, he had referred earlier to going there a lot with his family, with his wife. It's yeah. his meditation, or it's his de-escalation, his de-stress thing. So that didn't bother me so much. And then he used it again. He used the plural later in another context. God, let me write. Uses we a lot to include his family trips to park, as well as he then uses that we with the police to include them. Mm-hmm. We're not, you know, what are we doing here? What are we working on here in this interview? Paraphrasing. But so it didn't step out to me as much as like, because I think if where you're going is where you're going with that there could have been another person involved.
Not no. for me.
If he did it.
Not for me. Sorry. What was jumping out to me was that it seemed to me that his norm for going there was probably going there with his wife. And the only significance of that,
sure.
whether it's significance, is what I took out of that is that maybe it was abnormal for him to go there alone.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my takeaway. And my takeaway was, yes, it was just so very clear that they are talking about one time. And it's the time that everyone, including him, has agreed and established that his wife was not part of.
Right.
And so for me, it felt, and I also do not know. I do not have any, I just don't know at all about whether I think he's guilty or innocent. But I just thought that felt like a way of distance. And by the way, you would probably distance yourself from something like this anyway, because you don't want to be a suspect. And because you have watched the last years go by, seeing, you know, everyone analyzing on Facebook, who is it? It sounds like this person. I'm going to out this person as a bad guy. Like, it doesn't even sound like him, but this guy's terrible. So I understand wanting to distance yourself. So I'm not saying that it's an indication of guilt, but it just felt very, very obvious to me that every time. And I also thought it was a little interesting, and I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on this, and you too, Zach, that the police never say anything about it. Like, I could see them saying, now you keep saying we, Rick, are you saying you were there with someone? And then he's like, oh, and then he would say, oh, no, I just always go with Kathy. You know, I always, like, it's interesting that they just let that float out there without ever saying. So you say we a lot. Is it unusual that you went out there by yourself? Like, well, wouldn't those be things that you would kind of...
To be fair to them, though, at least in my experience, because I have, you know, my prior experience, I was trained to interrogate people, you know, as an arson investigator and stuff. And then, you know, now I've spent the last 10 years trying to learn how to analyze statements and interviews like this. And I can see how, like, they're two different things, right? I mean, you're really trying to pick up on that stuff when you're in the room, but I think it's a lot easier to go back and listen, you know, and watch it when you're really looking at it, analyzing it, to catch things like that, where maybe, especially because, I mean, they seem very, Dr. Scott, I don't know if you caught this too, but like they were, I said it many times through the episode, but like they were like textbook going down the read technique steps. It almost seemed like they were like focused on, you know, on what they were, you know, what their plan was going forward. So maybe they weren't being as observant as possible. Before we move on any further, and we all pounced real quick. Did you finish your thought, or do you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I mean, along where Janet was going with that is, it wasn't so much for me. It was more like that he was trying to distance himself by including another person, regardless if there was another person. Mm-hmm. Just that whole idea of like, were you there? Yeah, we go down there a lot.
Yeah.
Like never really answering the question, but just kind of continue. I mean, he does that several times where
a lot of avoidance.
There's a lot of
evasiveness. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I picked up on, more so than like, I didn't think it was a third party that we don't know about. I thought it was still him just trying to avoid whatever the question.
And I didn't think so either. I mean, he was pretty clear that he was there alone that day. It was just, mm-hmm. for me, it was just, you know, when I'm doing these, I'm trying to pick out every little word and every word choice and everything like that. And it was just like, what's that telling me? And the only thing that I came up with that it could be telling me is that the norm when he goes there is to go there with his wife.
Well, and that's what I think, right? So you talk about in the episode about the parking. So he explains every detail of where he's going, and then where you park. Well, sometimes we park here, sometimes we park here, sometimes we park here. Well, and who are you know, when we go down there, together, you know?
Yeah.
It was very like, there were certain points.
It went on and on and on.
Yes.
Like for a very long time. That whole, I'm sorry, Zach, but
no, go for
to
it.
Interrupt, because I think that's so important. It was one of the main notes I wrote down, is when we're looking at people in interviews, providing too much extraneous information is a huge red flag for something. It doesn't necessarily indicate guilt, but going back to what you said in your show, Bob, is like, this guy, innocent or guilty, is definitely hiding something. Like, just so evasive and dancing around and what we would call superficially cooperative,
mm-hmm.
right? He's like presenting well, he's holding it together, but how much information is he actually giving during this process?
Right. The avoidance was huge. And also I'll point out too, that I don't even know that it necessarily means that he's hiding something, but I always try to think in terms, just from, you know, and obviously you're an expert in this. I've just read some books and had some mentoring on it, but I always had stressed to me that, you know, don't think that these behaviors mean they're lying. Don't think these behaviors mean they're hiding. What we can really judge is by these behaviors is that they're uncomfortable. For me, like when I judge baseline to something changes, like in the way they're talking about, okay, there seems to be discomfort there. And there definitely seemed a lot of discomfort that then led to that avoidance behavior too, which would lead me down that path of, there's a reason. It seemed to me that there's a reason he doesn't want to commit to where he was parked. Was kind of like, if I was trying to like to take as far back as I could go with it, there's a reason he doesn't. But then what we have to remember is that reason could be that he was afraid that he's being framed and that they're going to say, if you parked there, you did it. It could be as simple as that. Or it could be he was doing something he wasn't supposed to be doing, or, you know, or he was there killing the girls. Who knows? But it seemed to me very obvious that he made a constant effort to avoid committing to where he parked.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to GhostBed. GhostBed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every GhostBed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? GhostBed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days, a 101-night sleep trial, and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, GhostBed is slashing prices, up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. GhostBed, the coolest beds in the world.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to GhostBed. GhostBed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every GhostBed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? GhostBed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days, a 101-night sleep trial, and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, GhostBed is slashing prices, up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. GhostBed, the coolest beds in the world.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You got so many great comments here in the. I should not be looking at the comments because your listeners really have some great observations.
No, it's good though. I see what you're seeing.
One of them, Lynn, said, "Remember, it came out in court. He's diagnosed with dependent personality disorder," mm-hmm. which is really fascinating because there are so many things that have gone wrong in this trial and badly done as far as procedure. I mean, that part is horrific. Like how badly this has all been handled. But dependent personality disorder is not a thing anymore. So that should have been like the fact that an attorney didn't jump out and go, that's not in the DSM. That was done away with a long time. You know, that could have been a point. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's very interesting, though, that like we have ideas of what some personality disorders look like narcissistic personality. Everybody thinks it's going to be a big bloviating, huge personality. Well, covert narcissists present exactly the opposite. Yes, everything is about them, but they desperately, desperately need to be attached to someone who fulfills all those needs. Mm-hmm. So I just for Lynn, anybody else, is like, there's a lot of narcissism going on here. Again, regardless of whether or not he's guilty, like common sense would tell us, like anybody that, like if you go 15 minutes into an interview like that, it's like, hey, I don't like this is where this is going. We're going to shut this down. I'm leaving. Let's get an attorney. Mm-hmm. That's what the rational thing would be to do.
Right.
Those guys, I thought those the interrogators, the interviewers were really good because when they dropped the hammer, it wasn't like a huge shift.
No, it wasn't. Right. It was still very polite.
It was still so measured. And it's almost like he didn't know how to navigate it. Because in a way,
that gesture
giving him a lot of attention for an hour, like a lot of attention.
That gesture you just made with your head is exactly like, I felt like they were like testing the fence. Like they came and started to get real forceful. And then they started to get the feeling that he was going to lawyer up, walk out, and then they would back off. And then they would try to push it again until it was like, nope, there's the break point. Let's pull back. It was like just like testing those boundaries. Yeah, like I said, like to me, this was literally textbook. You could walk through like to the point where the first time I was watching it and I was going like in my mind, I was kind of playing through what's coming next. Like I could predict when they walked out of the room that last time. I was like, okay, so now they should come in and put some evidence in front of him. Like, that's what's going to happen next. And it's like, sure enough, here they come. Like, now we got a story on the record. Now comes the interrogation part. And they followed it step by step by step. And that was, for me, as I talked about in the episode, the thing that was jarring for me. Because I got to be honest with you. Up to that point, because of the avoidance about the parking spot, I know we have questions. We're going to talk about the fish thing. So I want to talk about that right now. The issues I had with the fish thing about why he was there. I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, okay, he very well may be guilty. Like this seems like there's some big red flags here. But for me, there was something like when they pushed him and put the evidence, which is the point you're supposed to be starting to break him, and his reaction to that and him getting like more confident and more strong with that, I was like,
yes,
what the fuck is going on here? I was like, this is not what I was expecting. I was expecting, because of what I had started to build up in my mind, and that's why I said I went through this three times. What I had started to build up in my mind through the analysis I was doing up to then is like, okay, they got him on the ropes. He's probably guilty. They're going to break him. And then they give him the thing that just like I would have done to try to break him. And there's like the reaction goes completely the other direction than you would expect it to go.
He has a bigger reaction to the idea that they're going to look at his browser history.
Right. And that they called his wife.
That is certainly in line with what are they going to find out? Are you going to tell my wife?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really astute observation on your part is like, everything that we kind of would have expected from an evaluation, a narrative, an interview like this seems a little bit off kilter.
Yeah. And that's so, and I guess we'll probably move into some questions. Before we do that, I want to have you kind of give a Reader's Digest version of what was your assessment with that? Because, you know, my shortened version is it seemed to me that the way he was avoiding the parking spot stuff and some of the stuff about why he was at the bridge seemed like he was maybe doing something he wasn't. He was hiding something. But then when it came to his reaction, once they started presenting with evidence about the crime and the ways I did not get the impression that he was concerned about being convicted of this crime. It seemed like he was concerned about him being found out about something else. And I'll say to that before I turn it over to Scott too. A lot of people had said, and hopefully this isn't one of your questions, or maybe it is, maybe we could get it through them anyway, Janet, but some people had said to me in conversations I was having online is, well, yeah, but if that was if you were hiding something, surely it wasn't as bad as murder, they would have brought it out to him. And I explained,
yes, that is that, questions.
That's why the Reed technique works. Because during the phase where you're putting that story on the record and you're making those mistakes, you don't know you're being interrogated. Like they were very good about this is just to clear you. We're just talking to everybody. And so especially if you're an innocent person, you're like, oh, I'm just sitting down helping the police. I'm like, oh, but I don't want them looking at the porn on my computer or whatever the thing is. Right. I'm going to hide that because I'm not concerned about them. You know, that's why it works, because you make little missteps and lies and mistakes during that interview rapport building phase. And then once they drop the hammer, it's like you already feel like you're committed. You're in too deep at that point. Like you can be like, okay. I was parked here. Cause you know, like that's going to make it worse. Now, if I'm like, I do remember where I parked here. I did this. So it's not like it's, and my point is, it's not a fair really comparison or thought to make that, well, he was being, you know, whatever he was doing wasn't as bad as murder. He would have came out with it. I don't think that you're probably right. If he knew at the beginning that he was a prime suspect in the murder, but he didn't know that at the time when he was saying those things.
Well, I think the pushback on that is from the, just to acknowledge some of these posts, the pushback on that would be like, at some point post this interrogation interview, however you want to put it, that at some point, you know, does Ed say, okay, I lied about the ride, because right. I didn't want my mom to know I took the car. Like, where is that? I think people are saying like, okay, sure, in this interview, but where in the course of him being found guilty through that entire process is him saying, all right, I'm going to come clean. It was this thing, which I know is horrible, but it's still better than murder.
Well, the problem is, though, like, he didn't testify at his trial. Like, once he's arrested, we don't get stories from him anymore. But also, that listener or you, whoever brought that name up, is the perfect example. Took Ed 18 years before he admitted that he lied, why he lied about which car he took.
That's why I brought it up, actually.
Yeah. But I'm going to turn it over to you, Scott. Your thoughts.
So just another, Susan is in the comment section and said, you know, is he more worried to lose Kathy? Which I think is a really great point, because what if this relationship is so important to him that what could be discovered, what could be revealed about searching the house could be devastating? Because he seems, and Bob even pointed this out, this is a guy that really, really is super, super enmeshed with his loved one. So the other thing that confuses it for me, and somebody made a great joke in here, which I was like, oh my God, they're talking about me. Because I'm doing it right now. I just keep talking, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I have learned as an adult with ADHD, I had to learn coping skills of going, oh, this person's eyes just went blank that I've been talking to for a half an hour about Battlestar Galactica, right? Because that's my interest. It's not their interest. Let me pull it back a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I see him doing a lot of, so I'm trying to discern as I'm listening to him, what is the motivation for him in giving all of this information? There was a whole thing about the red car. Was it the red car and the black car?
They're two different cars.
He's describing the two cars.
And he tells that separate story about how he fell asleep at the wheel or something.
Yeah. Exactly. And then it's like this whole other thing that you're going, you know, you're here being asked about a murder. Like, why are you talking about this? Right.
Yeah.
So it made me wonder about, sort of, does he have sort of a different cognitive makeup? Is he motivated by hiding things? But then you look at the big picture of the superficiality of his comments, the too much information that we don't know what the motivation for that is. Is the motivation to hide or to obscure or to redirect the conversation? I don't particularly, and this is no, you know, I don't know him personally. I have not evaluated him. He doesn't seem like he's that swift to be able to make these calculated, you know, long game plans to navigate this or redirect the interview. So that's one thing. The other is that it's overcompensating. So there's a lot of overcompensating he does narratively that is indicative of something. Again, this all just circles back around to, what is he hiding?
Right.
And why wouldn't it have come out by now? Right. After all this time has passed, the guy is clearly not doing very well emotionally, behaviorally, mentally, where he is. If there is another big secret, why hasn't that been revealed and used as part of his defense?
That's kind of where, and if I may, I'll just add Laura V's post in here while we're talking about kind of whether or not someone has a cognitive brain load to be able to manipulate a conversation. I'll just throw this in here. She says, it seems as though Richard Allen knew exactly when police officers moved from making him feel comfortable to interrogation. So she disagrees with kind of what I think we were just saying a minute ago, which is like they do sort of seamlessly blend into it. But perhaps for Laura, she feels that she felt that perhaps he did know. What if he knew ahead of time that they would eventually get there via internet searches or watching a lot of Law and Order, and was mentally prepared to react, quote, correctly, quote? He may have even practiced in his head ahead of time. Would that have skewed the results, or do you believe it is impossible for someone to do so believably? If he did so, he might not have thought out what to say about where he parked the car ahead of time, but he had pat answers for the rest of the questions. If he was guilty, he would have had a lot of time to think about what he would say when asked.
I think that's given him way more credit, in my opinion, to be that for, because you saw, if you watched the video, and it sounds like you watched it. Did you watch it, Zach?
Yes.
Yeah, you did too. Yeah. You see, but to me is a very honest reaction. I think I said in the episode too, like, not only can I see when they shifted into the interrogation phase, Richard Allen also said, because he like called it out.
Right.
They were like, you know,
and his body,
his body language changed. And then he said it because they were like, we're treating you good. He's like, you were, but this has changed. Now all of a sudden you're treating me like, now you're interrogating me. it's like the, right. he that was the moment, and I was like, yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. Like, that's exactly what just happened, is they shifted from interview to interrogation. But no, I don't think he was like, I mean, even our true crime audience, people that have been listening to my show for years and years and years, and have heard us talk about Reid technique over and over again, I'm still not sure that a huge overwhelming majority of this audience fully understands the process of the Reid technique in general, to the much that we're like, because he watched a lot of Dateline, he knows, you know, for him to know like, well, first they're going to do this, then they're going to do this, then they're, I don't think so. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, he knows the TV version.
Right.
But also,
yeah,
if this, that is any bit true, he is the best actor I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That would be giving him a lot of credit that just doesn't seem consistent.
Right.
For his life.
Oh, I want to circle back to the parking thing, too. I don't disagree with you guys at all. And I know that it's both sometimes slightly useful and also like utterly dangerous and not useful to apply to ourselves. But when we are social creatures and when we see behavior, we do tend to ask ourselves, like, is it possible I would have a similar reaction for perhaps an innocent reason in the same situation? So I was just kind of thinking about, for example, like, there is a really beautiful, great park in San Antonio where Brandon lives, where Brandon's family is. And we, whenever we go to San Antonio, we always go to that park. The parking areas are so confusing to me. If we go from one direction, we go in and I think we're in a totally different parking area. And it turns out we're in the same parking area. We just came at it from a different way. And I've been there many, many times. Truly, if I thought I was just going in to help someone and I genuinely didn't think I was a suspect and I was just being asked like a question I wasn't expecting, which is like, and where did you, like, it is important for us to know where you parked. Or even if I just didn't, that's just not something I had paid attention to. I could absolutely see myself like just verbal diarrheaing, trying to walk through everything, not so unlike what he did. I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but I just wanted to leave a little room for the possibility, or just get your opinion, because I could just see myself being like, okay, if we had come from breakfast, that's, I know we go on, you know, Hardburger Road to do what, you know what I'm saying? Like, I could I can totally see him not remember.
I mean, and to me, honestly, I think that's given quite a bit of credit even with that, because one, it was like the next day he's in there, like giving statements about where he was parking. It was a significant day. Two, like I believe they had presented with him what he had said in his previous statement about
that. Oh, they did. Okay. Well, then never mind.
Yeah. Like they told him, like you said, then you parked at the Farm Bureau. So like, to me, it felt very like, it seemed like very obvious avoidance. It was like,
yeah,
every time we want to ask you, where'd you park? You told him then you parked here at the Farm Bureau, where, and then it was like, let me tell a story about wrecking my car. You know, like it just was like anything to get away from it is kind of how I felt about it.
Yeah.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101 night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices, up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. Ghostbed, the coolest beds in the world.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial. And up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Scott, I wanted to ask you before we go into too many of those other questions. We touched on it a little bit, but I was yapping and you were just sitting there. The element of when they made the shift in interrogation mode and they started kind of presenting him with the evidence and started pushing against him and his reaction to that. What did you have a similar reaction to mine, or which was like, huh, that like the posture change, everything that he seemed very confident at that point. What were your thoughts about that part of the interview?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was prepared for it. I was thinking that it was going to be a lot more overt. It was going to be bigger. I thought it was actually pretty subtle. It was almost like my interpretation was not necessarily an indication of guilt, but an indication of, oh, I'm screwed. You know, that was mine. I mean, because, you know, we've seen, I mean, all of us here, how many in tapes have we looked at? Even like with the Pinyon Pines, like all of those interrogation tapes. Right. And there are some, you see some very big body motions, especially from the kids, teenagers that are being interviewed and stuff. This one to me was a lot more subtle, but I did see something, you know, I felt like something was happening in his thought process. You know, he just feels like I'm in, like you were saying earlier, I'm in deep, but I didn't feel, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, I've seen evaluations where people throw themselves back, you know, where they do that thing where they lean back in their chair to exaggerate, like I'm really relaxed and I'm comfortable with this, where, you know, oh no, this is really a defensive way of trying to push back against thing, knowing that they're screwed.
Yeah. For me, it was less, you know, there was a definite obvious shift in posture, but as far as it was more about what he was verbalizing. What you're looking for in that phase of the interrogation is like you're tripping them up, and now what you want to happen next is for them to start making excuses. And part of the read technique is then to like offer them excuses, right? Like, oh, maybe we're there. Maybe it was an act. You know, maybe they did this, and the next step is to try to get you to admit you did something, but maybe it was an accident, or maybe it wasn't your fault, or something like that. It's all like death by a thousand cuts is the way the read technique works, right? So you're just like, first, I've got you to commit. You put a story on the record. Now I've convinced you that you've lied about that. Now you're on defensive. Now I'm going to make some suggestions, and until you'll give us, you know, an excuse like, okay, yeah, I was there, but I didn't do the. And now you're there. Well, now you did it, but it was an accident, right? And so, like, when I expected him to start making excuses about the thing, I'm trying to be careful because I started analyzing the second interview, and I'm trying to separate my brain one from the other, so I don't want to go too far with this. But in that point, instead of where I would have expected maybe some backpedaling to some trying to explain things, I just, what it seemed to me was like a very strong, was like, oh, like, no, you're trying to say, absolutely not. There's nothing, like, there was, he gave nothing. Once it came to, we think you might have done this or been involved, it was like, all of a sudden, like, I'm going to powerfully and consistently tell you, absolutely not. This is crazy. What are we doing here? This is nuts. I'm not doing this. Now you piss me off. You know, it was just that reaction caught me off guard.
Yeah. When he ramped up to that, the first thing I thought of was Patsy Ramsey. Okay. When Patsy Ramsey really pushes back against the police, you know, after, and again, that's a whole other case, but you know, the public was, or the police were so really dug their heels in when she said, well, then you need to go back and do your effing work and figure this out and get, you know, because she was exhausted by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, he's really pushing back hard in a way that seems, that was not like Zach was saying, I don't think he's that good of an actor.
Right.
Now, again, doesn't indicate guilt or innocence. I know we keep saying that over and over again. I just think it's important because God knows how many people are going to take anything that we say out of context.
Sure.
But it is notable, like to use a clinical term, if I'm doing an evaluation or writing a note or writing a piece, it's like it's a notable reaction that is not consistent with what you would expect from someone who's already been through this long of a process with them.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. To me, there was, the word I keep choosing myself is confidence, but I just didn't get the feeling from him during that part that he had any worry at all that they were going to prove he did this. It was just like, it was kind of like, fuck you. I'm done being nice. You're trying to accuse me of murder now? Hell no, I didn't do this. I'm not worried about it. Do what you got to do. Because I don't know. In interviews, I've talked about this show there before, but there used to be a show on Oxygen called Criminal Confessions, and I loved it. And that was about the time I was working with Jim Clemente a lot, and he was like training me in a lot of this stuff. So I would watch every episode of it because these were people that were guilty, that were proven later to be guilty, and you got to watch the entire interrogation process, and you watch how they react when they make that shift. And it was just like, this was just so different from that. Notable, I guess. It was just like, oh, he's like, either he's a really good actor or he's really not worried they're going to find evidence. And again, my brain just bled over to the next interview again, so I'm going to pull back before it. I want to see what you're doing next week, Scott, too, because have you seen the second interrogation yet?
No, but I'm ready to watch it now. Now you've hooked me into this whole other thing. I have to go bury myself.
That interview involves them really really presenting him with some hard evidence and his reactions to it. It's interesting. So maybe we can get you back next week again too. That'll be an interesting one. But let's keep going on with this one now before I spill the beans.
Yeah, but I would quickly say, just as a side note, I think what's interesting about behavioral analysis is that using the JonBenet Ramsey case as a really good example, you can have five behavioral analysts. What you can have five behavioral analysts look at one thing, and they all, like, half of them say that they are they've decided that use of that word means that person's guilty, and then the other half are like, I use the tools a totally different way, and to me, I'm seeing an indication of innocence. Now we're not doing that either way with the Richard Allen interview, but a tool is a tool, but it's still in the hands of a human being, so still things are getting filtered through our own lens and the other pieces of evidence that we're choosing to look at. And I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. And that's precisely why I wanted Dr. Scott to come on and even why I use the ChatGPT, because there's people that are like, all behavioral analysis is just reading tea leaves. I don't subscribe to that school of thought. I think there's definitely something to it. I think it is overused. It is used to do things that it can't be used for. You know, you can't watch this interview and be like, yep, he's guilty. Like or the human lie detectors. I think that's bullshit. My personal
opinion. Absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do think there's something too. If you sit there and watch somebody and get a good baseline on them for 15, 20 minutes, and then you present them with a question and you watch their posture, their tone, their, you know, everything change. I think it's notable that there was a behavioral change there. And I think that it's something worth, I don't think it's not worth analyzing and interpreting, but I don't think it's the end all.
It's all data.
Yeah.
And you want as much data as you can. And then the job is to filter through it. And I think that that's where AI isn't, I don't know if it will ever be there, but like the human experience and expertise and filtering that information is what's so important. And like, look, I do have to make one comment about, you know, sort of immersing yourself in the read technique. And look, it is the gold standard for doing this kind of work, but it doesn't, again, it's looking through a particular lens.
Yeah.
And if you are given a list of videos to watch where it has worked, then it's creating a bias because you're only looking at the times that it absolutely has been successful.
Yeah.
You know,
I should point out, I hate the read technique. I don't, you know, I'm looking, I can see the aspects of it. I've studied, I was taught it years ago when I did it, and then, you know, I've studied it since for like statement analysis. So like, so I recognize the, how it works and what they're doing and what they're trying to do. But it also, as the creator of the read technique has said, like it's too powerful of a tool, and it's so good at getting confessions. It gets people to confess when they didn't do it.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's my big problem with it. It's, you know, and there are other tools, you know, Shiloh and I, you know, she had been doing this before as law enforcement or been exposed to it. But my first exposure to polygraph was us doing our internships together with sex offenders. And, you know, our polygraphers came in and they were evangelical about it. Like there was no right. error. This is 100% correct. And I was like, my mama didn't raise me to fall for hoodoo too quickly. Mm-hmm. We need to look at this. Is it a tool for black robe effect? Yes, it's a tool for black robe effect, much as many of the techniques in the read are, but it's not working if it's getting a forced confession, a false confession out of somebody.
Yeah.
That's a tool it's working, but it's not working in the correct way.
Yeah. And I say this all the time. Jen, it's in the very first chapter of the Read Technique book, it literally says it's psychological warfare. And speaking mm-hmm. of polygraphs, as you get later into the chapters, right. when you get in the interrogation phase, one of the things it suggests is get them to take a polygraph, and whether they pass or fail, lie to them and tell them they failed.
Oh, that's so scary and awful.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, excuse me, the willies. Get a lawyer.
And that's also, and that's in the manual that you're being ethical enough to read and understand. And the rest of the public doesn't know that.
Right.
Right.
You know, they're being fed one fraction of what's going on and going, oh, well, these guys know what they're doing. And they held this teenager for 16 hours until they were exhausted and dehydrated and blah, blah, blah. And the teenager confessed to these multiple murders. Well, how, you know, garbage in, garbage out, as far as data is concerned in that situation. Yeah.
Well, and just to call out Jen, because I know you posted this on the Facebook post as well, Jen, and you're here in the chat. Jen thought like that this had been widely accepted and understood by larger groups than the one sitting here, that it's out there that the read technique has been largely discredited or had been discredited because of false confessions. So is that's not true? We just want to draw a circle around it. Like it's still by and large, it's still like that's what we use and that's what goes in to a court of law.
Listen, there are defense attorneys and defense experts that will attack it and cite examples of it and how it to try to push against a false confession in court. But no, there's a Supreme Court ruling that says that police can lie to you. So there's certainly no Supreme Court. There's no law that says you can't use these manipulative tactics to break somebody down to give a confession, because I think the overwhelming
majority, most people think there is no such thing as a false confession. Like I think that most people still think like this tool is fine because people would never confess to something they didn't do, period. Like they keep thinking that that persists. Exactly.
Or they recognize that there are false confessions, but they're like, what is it, one out of a million? You know, like I don't think people,
collateral damage.
As like when I've interviewed Jim Trainum, he's like everybody thinks I would never. But the way he put it to me was, there is a particular gun that you can hold to everybody's head, even yours, that will get you to do it. You know,
I totally would confess.
Yeah.
I would totally confess.
Right.
It's interesting. There are some people that won't, that actually there's a narrow part of the population, people that are neuroatypical, like on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
Like really, really high functioning.
True is true.
Because it's not the way they're wired. They're like, nope,
not fast.
I don't lie. I cannot. They can't be manipulated that way.
Yeah, that's psychological warfare.
Have you guys
warfare
talked about that on your show? Because I would love to hear more about that.
We should. And you guys, I'm so sorry. This is fascinating. Please, I would love to come back next week if you'll have me. I got a client coming in the door in 30 seconds.
Same time, same channel next week. if you're available.
Bye, guys.
Thanks, Dr. Scott.
Thanks, Dr. Scott.
I'll be here.
Dr. Scott.
Bye.
That's what we got to do is just rope people into stuff like in the moment live when they have to.
You guys
do
heard
it
here.
Dr. Everyone.
Scott's
we just
coming
made
back
him commit
week.
To it. Yeah.
I can't wait because I went through my second pass of the second interview today and I have strong opinions about it.
Well, so I made a note in my phone and you told us all listeners to make a note of it when he talks about that. I told my wife that I was down there so that now we have to go to the police station.
Yeah.
Yes. So you definitely told us to end that.
Yeah. So I've made that note. I'm very curious to see where that goes next week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I got different thoughts on that now too, but I'll save.
Uh-oh. Well, we had a lot. So here's what I would say. I know we've been doing this a while. I also am going to have to break loose pretty soon. We didn't get to a ton of like literal actual questions and comments. Jen, I was able to give you a shout out. We talked about Tori and Nancy. One thing that I didn't want to do with Scott because that he wasn't brought in here to talk about like facts of the case or guilt or innocence was address some of the posts that are more in line with like the evidence and how the evidence comes into play or lack thereof with what he did or didn't say or what they did or didn't get out of him.
Well,
do you want to take a couple of minutes to talk about that and address a couple of those? Or do you want to just push to next week and like see where we are?
Yeah, I think we'll wait because we're already over 50 minutes in. And I really want to, because that's the problem with this case in a lot of cases, right? Is everybody wants to take what you're saying and then, yeah, like when we were analyzing the Bridge Guy video with Dr. Shiloh, right? And take it to what they know about the case, what the facts of the case is, it innocent or guilty? What does it mean? They want their biases seep into it. And I don't want this to be about that. I don't want anybody walking away from this thing like, well, Bob thinks that Richard Allen's innocent or Bob thinks Richard Allen's guilty. I'm just, you know, as we're getting stuff fed out to us, trying to look at one piece at a time, what does this thing tell us? And then, you know, later we can talk about how that fits into the bigger picture. But I don't think it's a useful conversation for this conversation to get into all that evidentiary stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And I will say, just shouting out readers or listeners like Christina and people who and Nancy, no one's saying like, I think this means he's guilty or innocent. I think they're just saying, you know, postulating like and the fish, you know, there are people
we should talk about the fish.
Say, like,
we should talk about the fish.
I wanted to just touch on that because we definitely had people push back on that and say that they didn't feel that you should have said that as an absolute.
Yeah. Somebody said it to me. And to be clear, I wasn't saying it as an absolute. What I was saying was what I was giving you was my opinion. And I think what I said was, I feel confident saying from my perspective that that's not what he was doing. I did have people share with me that Allie Mata had gone out there and there's a video out there for her. And then Dr. Laura Lee had given a really good clear video from the bridge to show that you could see fish from up there. I would be more comfortable with I go there and looking for fish, which in another review, I think at one point he does say looking to see if I could see fish or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. The problem is
Susan pointed that out.
And Dr. Lee's, or not Dr. Lee, and Lawyer Lee's video, you know, she zooms in like, look how clear it is. You can see, and she says like, I see a fish, but she zooms in and it's a log. It's not a fish. So there's a couple things there that the water is exceptionally clear, at least on the one side of the bridge. It's exceptionally clear for you to look down. You can see from the shadows, at least in, I remember, Allie Mata's, that the sun was kind of low at that point, which makes it easier to see in as opposed to, you know, Richard Allen saying he's there around 1 p.m. I think it's probably more like 2 or 3 or 2 o'clock than he's there. When the sun's, I mentioned polarized glasses because those help with the reflection that's coming off of the water. Mm-hmm. It makes it harder to see down into the water. So if you had like amber colored polarized glasses, you could certainly see better. The issue I have with it is the type of fish in there. So like in a river like that, that's why I was looking to see like, does that somehow feed out into like the Great Lakes and there's like a salmon run through there? Because like that's something to watch. If you're up there, these, you know, big 15, 20 pound fish that are coming up in giant schools that are, you know, feeding on the surface and they're spawning, like that's something to watch. The type of fish that are in that stream are smaller and much more camouflaged fish. You know, you've got, you know, smallmouth bass and bluegill, which are little bitty fish. It's, you know, so to the point, I'll say, yeah, it's not an absolute. I'm not saying, and if I did then I'm saying now, like, I'm not saying there's no way he could possibly absolutely have been looking at fish. All I'm saying is, not only that, but the kind of the way he was talking about it, it seemed like it was kind of replacing something else. But also it just seems like to go stand up and look 63 feet down to look at, you know, for those of you that don't know, a smallmouth bass is a copper colored fish with a little bit of black on it. Like they're designed to blend into the bottom. Like you don't, and they stay in deep holes. They don't go, they're not in the shallows like a trout is, you know, so they're down deeper in the darker spots of the water. So that's what I meant. Like,
well, I think to piggyback off your point, I think there's a difference between him saying he went to watch the fish and went to see if he could see fish.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I could see you going out there and go, I want to see if I can see anything.
Yeah,
absolutely. But to say you were watching them, that's a much different story.
Yeah, and that was when I did go back through and check that, because somebody pointed it out to me that he does kind of say, I think, if I remember correctly, like the first couple times he's like, I go up there and I look at the fish. Mm-hmm. And then there was like, I think it was like a third time or another time down, he said, I was out there to see if I could see the fish, you know?
Yeah. Couple things for me, and then I do need to jet. And I'm sorry I said jet. I'm already embarrassed that I used that term. Susan, shout out to you, Susan. Susan did some research, was looking to try to figure out if there was trout and the DNR website and walleye, kind of listing different areas in the area. A couple things. Just to acknowledge a couple of other posts, like people from Tiffany or Nancy, I am not suggesting this. I don't think they are either. It is a question. It is an open-ended question. But I would like your opinion on whether 63 feet is high enough that if somebody who had felt that they wanted to end their lives in the past, would that be a place that you might go to think about what it would be like if you jumped?
I saw some of those comments. Like I'd said, it to me, and it seemed like Dr. Scott kind of felt the same way, like he was hiding something. He didn't want it known what he was doing there. And a few people have made the suggestion, like, what if he was out there to either consider or maybe had a plan to end his life out there. You know, he had depression issues. He had a lot of those things going out. And I think there's no way for me to know if that's it, but is that a reasonable, is that something that you would try to kind of hide and avoid in that conversation 7 years later? Probably.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh my God, I can't, living in that environment and the nation that we live in, where we have a very negative like relationship to mental health, and being a white male in the middle of America, I would say I was looking at fish. I don't think I would even feel comfortable saying I just like to go there and meditate, or like I like to go there and just think my thoughts. I feel like in this context, you have to have like a manly reason.
Right. Yeah.
I'm making a lot of assumptions here, but I do. I mean, I have friends who have gone much more regularly to places like that alone. Mm-hmm. And they would not want their family to know, because many times you go over and over. It's a thing you do. It's almost like a release valve. It's like, I don't have to do it today, but I can just go and know I could.
Yeah. And to answer the question poignantly, 63 feet. Yeah, absolutely. To put it in perspective, I had a friend, Becky and I had a mutual friend years ago that passed away after falling off. It was two rungs high on a ladder and fell back and hit his head and passed away. So 63 feet, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think with that, let's go ahead. Janet's got to go. We're running long, so we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up here. But make sure you tune in on Sunday. I'm going to be breaking down Richard Allen's second interrogation video on Sunday. And then sounds like we're going to have Dr. Scott back again next week to talk about that.
Awesome.
So we'll see you guys then.
Very cool. Thanks for all the great feedback and questions, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content.
just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and 4-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.